Mr. O'Sullivan, rail 28. Right, Mr. O'Sullivan, you've been thinking about the night.
Yeah, we must have been at home the night. And if I remember rightly, the announcement wasn't made until evening time that the war, you know, we knew it was over. Because me and my younger brother, who was on leave from the Navy, merchant Navy, went down into the town, and there was a big party going on outside the Elswood Hotel. And we was there while 3 o'clock in the morning. And there was Harris Miller, who was his first name? The publican at the Elswood Hotel. The Elswood Hotel was a well-known pub in, and Harrison was a very popular landlord, and it was nearly free drinks for everybody that night at the pub. And he had a good day. If you was a soldier or a sailor, you'd know to be going to drink. And we was there, and there was lasses was there, and we was dancing in the high street. Because the town has changed a lot since then, but not it hadn't changed a great deal up to that time. We had a really good night, and we got home at 3 o'clock in the morning, and my mother didn't go to sleep. I don't think anybody went to sleep that night.
No.
I'm nearly sure the announcement that the war was over was an evening announcement. I wouldn't be sure what it was, but I think it was.
No, you hadn't, obviously, you hadn't drunk that much real beer or real alcohol at all. So, did that affect you in that
way? Well, I got drunk.
And how did you feel the next morning?
Well, I didn't. I was all right next morning. My mother let me sleep in bed. And I was still being pushed over by me. You see, my younger brother was already, he was in the merchant navy, but he came home on leave regularly. But my mother was spoiling. I couldn't sleep in a bed when I come home. I went to bed in the bed what was normally mine, and halfway I got out of bed and laid on the floor because the bed was too soft, and got used to sleeping on a palliasse, and I just couldn't sleep on the bed, and that's where, and of course when my mother came in the morning and found me fast asleep on the floor, she thought I'd fell out of bed, and I said no, I got out of bed because it's too soft.
How long did it take you to get used to?
Oh, maybe a week or two. You got, but it was that first night I remember sleeping on the floor.
Now, so you had this long leave. You were still in Scunthorpe. I think you mentioned off the tape something about extra rations or something. Could you describe that?
We got double rations from, and I'm sure we were issued with double ration cards for the full 13 weeks. Because my mother thought it was a godsend, because food was still rationed in this country. And we also got some parcels, sort of food parcel, through regimental associations, which had obviously bought them. And fellow there, and he's showing it anyway, he ain't showing this photo.
They called him Drury,
and he was the head of the British Legion at Scunthorpe. He was an ex-soldier from the 1914-18 war. And he organised these food parcels, and the first issue was made from outside Rodingham Church, not Rodingham, Scunthorpe Church, on Fulham Road, and Jack Lloyd, who was a councillor, who became a councillor anyway, he said, we've got one parcel each. And later on, and inside was all sorts of food, chocolate, meat, tin, all tin food, obviously. The thing my mother took out, she said she was going to save for Christmas, was a £2 tin of Canadian ham. Whether she did save for much for Christmas, I can't remember, because I wasn't there for Christmas. Because it was, and I mean, all this extra food, we got the extra ration, they obviously went into the family. I mean, mother didn't say, well, that's your, you've got two pieces of steak this week. It went into the family.
So how did you fill your time in on this long leave? What did you do?
Visiting friends, visiting relatives. My sister had a shop in Little Street. I visited her, I stopped, I spent a lot of time with her. Just doing nothing. Just lazing about and visiting people. Of course, we went dancing and I went back to my old girlfriend, Julie Lambert.
Had you managed to keep in touch with her?
Yes, I wrote to her and she wrote to her. She wrote to me more than the family did. Well, I got more of her letters than that.
And this was in the prison camp as well, you were still?
Yeah. Mm. While I was on this leave, there was a murder in town, in Redmond Street. And they said at this particular time that a soldier in uniform had been seen running away from the scene. And me and this Ian Lambert was going out together. And I said, "Man, I'm going out then. Where are you going?" I said, "Dean and I are going to pictures." So, and then Dean Lambert, she didn't look far away from where I was. So I went down with a picture with them. While we were walking down into town, we decided we wouldn't go to pictures. We'd go to the Savoy, which is a theatre. So the next day, the police come round visiting every soldier who overnows in town. And I went to tell them the police came, and the policeman said to me, "Well, your son, the soldier, and where was he last night?" "Well, he went to pictures with his girlfriend. He went out with Jean Lambert." "Oh, where does Jean Lambert live?" "Well, she lives just along here at 34 Dallas Avenue," which was sort of a long road was like that, and then Dallas Avenue carried on, you know. So this policeman left our house and went to Jean's house, and Jean wasn't in. And he said to Jean's mother, "Was Jean out with Mr. Sullivan, Father Sullivan?" "Yeah, he was, yeah." "Any idea where they went?" "Yeah, they went to the Savoy, the theatre." My mother said, "Be that if we were back at our house, because we still didn't correspond." I don't think they did catch anybody for that murder.
And what was the murder about? What was it?
But it was just a woman who had been battered to death by a soldier.
Now, at the end of this 13 weeks, what happened?
Well, I got a railway warrant to go to, I'm sure it was Beaconsfield, in Kent. For retraining and that was it.
So you went down there?
So I went to Beaconsfield, and it was a retraining centre. And it also had to be, we had another medical. We had to run a mile, I'm sure we had to run a mile in six, I think it was 6 minutes. And we did all sorts of exercises, and we had retraining things on. You got a book, and it had so many different pictures in it, and you had to say that section, put it in there, or number three fits in there. And all that sort of training. We had a bicycle pump. We had to reassemble a bicycle pump. We listened to a record of signals. A proper record of signals, you know, dots and dashes. And the idea was that we had this piece of, you had a piece of paper with it, and it would say same or different. Same or different, and you had to tick one or the other of what you thought these. They'd give you dot dot dot, or you know, twice, and you had to say whether the first was set off, or second was same, or you know, whether those two same. Anyway, it was just trying to find people who could be any good as signals, I think, and we had to reassemble this bicycle pump, and then we had a math test on just on a simple English maths.
Just arithmetic.
Arithmetic, yeah. And when you'd finished, everybody was assessed. There was maybe 12 in this room at one, put together, and then the fellow from the a teacher from the education corps. He did it, a sergeant. And the bottom of this little list that he'd give you was what suggested where you were supposed to, and then mine said suggested Royal Army Pay Corps, and that was it.
Now,
and the other people got, you know, there's when they say a signal guy, they were good on the signal. So.
Now, you had this second medical, were you downgraded?
No, from still B7.
But that was below the infantry grade,
yeah.
Which was A1, yeah. Now, at this training camp, was everybody there POWs, ex-POWs?
We're all ex-POWs.
And they were from all different regiments and so on?
All different regiments, and we had no regimental signals. We didn't, my battle dress, everybody's battle dress was plain. There was no indication of which regiment you'd come from.
Did men keep the rank? Did they have the rank insignias? Yes,
rank insignias, but they had no authority.
Now, did you meet anybody here that it's from your...
No, I never met anybody at all from the... I never once met another man who was in Spain with us.
Now, did you meet up with anybody at this point? Did you become friends with...
Not particularly. We weren't there long.
So how long were you there, do you think?
Only about a fortnight.
And then what happened?
Then I was brought to do Footscray in Kent to the Royal Army Pay Corps. And at the Royal Army Pay Corps, that's the first time I went into civilian lodgings with the Army. I reported to a place called Footscray, and the sergeant in charge of. Sometimes you had a sergeant and sometimes you had a civilian in charge at Footscray, because there were civilians and army personnel working side by side. The fellow, you worked in a long table thing, and you had two big binders with about, I don't know, maybe 500 names in each binder. But first of all, the sergeant said to me, "Well, you're doing civilian billets while you're lodging at Black Fen, which obviously went far away from Footscray." And he gave me 3 or 4 addresses. So he goes to these people that are accepting you as a... They're being paid to keep accommodation for the personnel. So the first one I went in and she was a big woman, and she was washing, you say, I don't know. Anyway, I went in and she said, "Yeah, she showed me the bedroom." And I thought, "Oh, well, I'll stop here, won't you?" And the woodman pub wasn't far away. So I went up, she showed me upstairs and I took my kit up. I had my kit back with me. I took my kit up. And the time I put the stuff in the drawers and that, what she'd given me in the room of the woman. I didn't know what she was going to do, I had only handled it before, I wasn't really caught in that. And I'm sitting on the bed and I look at my legs and all of a sudden it was, "What are you doing?" "Nothing. Well, get yourself down here then." So I come down and she made me a cup of tea. And after that she was excellent. She really looked after us.
Can you remember her name?
No, I can't. I can't look at her names. Can't see her now. She was... And her husband came in. She weighed about 15 stone and he weighed about 6. And she was really in charge. She had a son living in town at that time. But he had a different background to me, obviously. And her husband worked on the trams, maintained the stand, he didn't drive the tram, he worked on the trams in London. And she really looked after them, very good. She couldn't do enough for you. She was, She was very interested in politics. Same with my mother was. And she was filling envelopes in for distributing leaflets sort of thing. And that's the first job I ever did for her, right, bloody envelopes for dresses. That first 92, because I didn't go out, I didn't know where to go anyway. And on the Friday night, after we'd filled all these envelopes, she was filling them, and if I remember that, I was licking them and sealing them. And after we'd finished, she said, well, come on, I'll take you to the pub, the Woodman. So she took me to the Woodman, and the first time I ever see a woman drink a pint of beer. She ordered a set of a pint, and when I asked for half a pint, she said, I'd never drunk a lot of beer. She was disgusted drinking half pints of beer, and she took a pint.
Now, she was involved in politics. Which political party did she support?
Labour.
Now, and your mother, was your mother still a solid Labour supporter?
Oh, definitely.
Now, there was an election around about this time, in this period, you know, between the two victory days. Do you remember much about that and what you felt about that at the time? And what your mother felt about it?
Well, the first election I really remember was while I was still at school. When Clive was first, before the war, David Clive was in his Labour Party.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we've talked about that, but in this 1945 period, what did you feel about that election result with Churchill?
Churchill was thrown out.
Yeah, what did you think about that?
I was disappointed, really, because I thought Churchill really did a good job. But Clive actually got in, didn't he? And Clive actually was, although he'd been in the cabinet before that, he'd been in the parliament, didn't he? In the coalition sort of thing. He was, I was always disappointed with Clive actually. I always felt he'd get a bloody empire rule. He's alright saying the. But anyway, that's just.
What was your mother's opinion of him?
Well, she thought he was all right, but she thought David Clavell was a better sort of a man. Because she knew David Clavell. But I was always disappointed with him, happily.
Did you vote in that election?
Yeah.
Who did you vote for?
I voted for Labour. I couldn't do anything else, could I? Really.
But you were disappointed that Churchill...
Oh, I was disappointed that Churchill ran up there.
Now, what was your daily routine at the Royal Army Pay Corps at this stage?
We had to be at work. We started work at 9. You could either get a bus from Blackfen to Footscray, which you paid your own fare. You had to make your own way there. Because after I'd been there about 3 months, I thought I brought my bicycle from Scunthorpe down to Blackfen. And I used to go on my bike. You had to make your way out back to Sidcup. And there was a lot of ATS girls, army boys, civilians working in the same. It was a massive place. And like it was offices, but there was hundreds of people in the same office. Because it was just one table. And when I was sitting here, and you'd be sat there.
Just
as it was
just
the table. Mm-hmm. And all my clients were Smiths. This was an. RA.
Royal Artillery.
Royal Artillery, pay corps office. They were all called Smith.
And
every one of them.
How were those names arranged? What was it?
It was arranged in army numbers.
But it was a big, was it a big folder or a file?
It was a big folder, big file. It had hard covers, and on every page was a different man. Every page was like. The Smith RA, the first thing was his army number, and it said Smith RA, such and such a battalion. That's where it started. It would show at the top of the page where it was when it started. And then every day you would get a slip of paper, and it would be movements or credits or where you'd drawn from credit. Men asking for what they got in credit. Well, the men weren't asking, but the battalions were asking. So you used to have to get this slip. First thing he did was to read his number, and his initials, and then you had to find his number in the book. And you'd enter what was ever on that slip. If a lance corporal was transferred from one battalion, one battery to another, he automatically was demoted back to bombardier or private. So he had to show that on his record. If for any reason he got jankers and 3 pairs a day, it lost three days pair, which often occurs. You show the 3 days pair docketed against his credits. And the bottom line was always how much man adding credit after every payday was shown in that binder.
And would these slips come to you by post?
No, they came. Well, they came into the main office and they were sorted by another staff. I would only get them. The corporal or the sergeant or the civilian who was on charge of our table would bring them, and he would put in front of me all them what was appertaining to my binders. My binder never went from, I forget what the RA number was, say it was at 200 and finished it at 400 or 800, whatever. All them things appertaining to them binders was left in front of me.
So how many names did you have to get through in a day?
Well, you might have an easy day. You might only have 100 entries all to do. Another time you could have. If it had been a payday, the trouble was, the paydays, all the men in my book weren't in the same regiment, weren't in the same battery. You know, there was all Royal Artillery, but it was in different units. So you could never get 300 of them had been paid that day. All the slips had come through. So it wasn't a matter of when they got paid, it was a matter of when they come to the office, sent the relevant documents through to the main office.
What did you feel about this kind of work?
I enjoyed it. And then while I was there, it comes on the tannoy, because there's a big tannoy system in this place. Well, no, first of all, I'd only been there about 5 or 6 weeks. And I got a letter from my mother saying that my brother Jack was coming over with me from Italy, from Yugoslavia. He was in Yugoslavia with Tito. He was coming over with me.
What had he been doing there? Your brother?
He was with the RAs, who he was with. Went into Yugoslavia to help Tito. Mm-hmm. And he was coming home on leave. And he would have had to come passionately. My brother's coming home. Anyway, I went to see the lieutenant who was overall in charge of the human table. And I asked him, I said, 7 days, starting Friday. Apparently you're only allowed so many, railway ones from the army. He said, if I can, I'll get the railway one, otherwise you have to pay your money. If you lend any money, you should go to the office, they'll give you money to pay for the fare on. Anyway, he got the railway one, and I went home only for another 7 days to meet the dinner. Which I did, and we had 7 days of good play, and a good time, got drunk a time or two, which was, And then I went back to Portugal, when we out and come over the town. I volunteered, wanted to go to Rome, which is in the pay office in Rome. And I wasn't doing anything particularly down there, no particular friends, so I thought, why not? Veteran there than veteran abroad. So I volunteered, and I think there were 8 of us volunteered. So we had to have some more inoculations. And we went to be inoculated before we could go abroad again. And most of these kids hadn't been abroad, they hadn't been inoculated before, they hadn't been abroad before. And this medical officer said, well, we'll best come for as long as I was at it before. And we're just lining up to be inoculated, just while he stays up and they put one in that arm and one in that arm. And I was first in and looked round and was laid on the floor. They'd nearly fainted. So anyway, we come to Rome.
Now, just before we get to that, how did you actually get to Rome? By what route? I mean, by air, by land?
No, by train. Went through Switzerland.
And how long did that take?
I don't know, actually. But it was a couple of days, I would think. I don't know. But we went through a hell of a long tunnel in Switzerland. And while I was going through this tunnel, somebody reported that one of the carriages was on fire. Actually, it was, we didn't have, we got stuck with fucking in Switzerland. And while I was in Switzerland, they let us get off the train. We could get off the train, but we couldn't go into out of the railway station. And at that time, I smoked. I was into the man to smoke.
So you started smoking after you came back? Yeah. What started you that?
Just the fact that others were smoking, I think. It was a sociable thing to do anyway. And we was on this railway station, and I just, we were talking, I was just walking about and talking, lit a cigarette, packet empty, and I just threw it on the floor. And a woman picked it up. And she brought it back and she said, I believe this is yours. I said, it's empty, love. She said, but we don't throw rubbish on the floor. I felt that sound. Oh dear. And she wasn't rude about it or nasty about it. The fact that she was so pleasant made us feel that way.
And she was a Swiss woman.
And she spoke perfect English, which a lot of them don't. They spoke French and they spoke German. But she said, I believe this is yours. Yes, love, I said, it's empty. And she said, well, we don't throw rubbish on the floor. And I've never been that way, Switzerland and Austria. It looks clean, doesn't it? And you know, it really looks a clean place. It was clean, anyway.
Now you've got to Rome. What happened there?
You know, when you got to Rome. Prior to going, while I was in the barracks, not barracks, no, I didn't do that, I think later, didn't I? Yeah, we got to Rome and this Sergeant Major, who was a volunteer as well, but he was a Sergeant Major in the Army Pay Corps. Of course, we'd been talking on this train and he said to me, where do you want to be? I said, how the hell do I know? Well, he said, you've been here before, because I've been to Italy as a bloody prisoner of war. I thought, I don't know why I ever had bloody Rome. Anyway, we took us to this big central office. The email itself, it was really a big school that had taken over. It was a very similar thing to what we'd been doing in Butch Club. We weren't handling any money. We're doing bookwork out of money. And in this place there's a lot of our times working as well. Because they had to work, if they worked, they got extra rations. I think they're out of money, but they got extra rations. But we were out of stocks. They did very much. Anyway, we could go into the left. We worked 9 till 5 with an hour and a half in the barrack. It was just like being in barracks, but we were working in this office sort of thing. And we had a general in charge. We had a general in charge of the old. And we used to have to stand There was a curfew. You had to be in 9 midnight.
Station number 20789, Patrick O'Sullivan, Reel 29. Upper track is into informant only, lower track interviewee only.